Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest in our series of special Empire podcasts. This one is not a spoiler special. It is dedicated to the British comedy giant that is Red Dwarf. Not the current series, Series 12, which can now be seen on Dave, of all places, as a channel, not a man, but the series as a whole. And joining me to talk about Red Dwarf are three colleagues at Empire who, over the years, I've come to regard as people I met. Johnny Pyle.
Hello, mate.
Nick DeSimlian.
Hello.
And James Dyer.
Sharmita.
James Dyer immediately getting his Red Dwarf cock out on the table and establishing his credentials straight off the bat. What did you just say?
Classic Esperanto.
Oh, Esperanto.
Yeah.
Of course, because Rimmer learns Esperanto.
Indeed.
Okay, there we go.
This makes you the Rimmer of the group.
Technically, he doesn't learn Esperanto. Lister learns Esperanto from Rimmer's tapes, but Rimmer's terrible.
This is true. All right, so, see, James is weird, because James is immediately the Crichton of the group, but also the Rimmer of the group. And
I refer you to Space Corps Directive 192, which clearly stands.
I think we're all the Rimmer of the group.
Do you think we're all the Rimmer of the group?
Well, you know the classic saying, if you don't know who the Rimmer in the group is, you're the Rimmer.
Nick, who would you say you are? Are you the Holly of the group?
I'm probably the Lister.
You're the cat. You are absolutely
I'll
the cat.
I'll take the cat. I was going to say, when I started watching
yes,
it, I was
so well dressed.
Really well dressed. Thank you, James. I used to eat a lot of curry-flavoured pot noodles when I was at school, when I started watching Red Dwarf, so I related to Lister for that reason. But I'll take cat. I'll upgrade.
I think you're the cat, because we're not recording this in a studio over at our podcast headquarters. We are recording it in a room at our actual headquarters, and I watched you walk past this room on your way to a completely different room.
Going, spinning around and
I saw a mirror over there.
That was very cat-like. Johnny, who are you? Who would you be?
Everyone wants to be Lister, right?
I don't want to be Lister.
Really?
No.
But he's the hero.
Is he, though?
He's a bit smelly.
Is he? Yeah, I love Lister, but his personal hygiene issues, I can't do it.
He's now beyond that, if you've watched the later ones. He's now got perfect personal hygiene, and he's the romantic lead.
Okay.
Yeah. He sorted his shoes out, that's true.
Yeah. So you're Lister. You're Lister.
Thanks.
You're Cat. Yeah. You're some sort of weird Crichton Rimmer hybrid. I honestly don't know what the hell to do with you. And
you're
will
the emo hawk.
I'm Dwayne Dibley.
Dwayne Dibley.
I think we all know I'm Dwayne Dibley. All right, but listen, before we get to talking about Red Dwarf and what it means to us and what it's meant to us over the years and favorite episodes, that sort of thing, we're going to hear from most of the cast of Series 12 and the show's co-creator, Doug Naylor. And,
I did this.
You did this. Johnny, you did this a couple of weeks ago. They came into our studio in central London, and you were talking to Craig Charles. Yeah, Craig Charles.
Danny John-Jules, Robert Llewellyn, mm-hmm. and Doug Naylor.
And Doug Naylor. Yep. Not Chris Barry, who was not available at the time, which is a bit of
he
a
had
shame.
Been available earlier in the day, but had gone home.
Was he rimmering?
Well, I don't want to comment on his private life, but...
I just like in the new series, they use rimmer as a verb.
Rimmer as a
enjoyed,
verb.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some light rimmering.
All right, so here you go. Here's some light piling. Johnny Pyle talking to most of the cast of Red Dwarf Series 12 and co-creator Doug Naylor. Enjoy.
Doug Naylor, Craig Charles, Robert Llewellyn and Danny John-Jules, writer and stars of Red Dwarf, welcome to the Empire podcast. It's a pleasure to have you all.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to be here.
Always a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. And we're here for Red Dwarf 12.
I know, can you believe it? That's how old we are.
I mean, 12.
We're 12, yes.
There was a time, right, when, Red Dwarf had a very uncertain future, and suddenly here we are on the 12th series. We were stuck on 6 for so long, and then we were stuck on 8 for so long, and now we're here.
It actually started after the first episode with the reviews. and do you know what? It gives us great and immense pleasure that we are still here.
This is the voyage of the starship Red Dwarf. Its mission to boldly go where many sitcoms have gone before, up its own backside. Very at home in this part of the television anatomy is Craig Charles. Where is this man from? Is he from a distant planet called Rent a Liverpudlian? Or was he spontaneously generated by a TV screen? No matter, Charles and this series are heading for a sticky end.
That was one of the reviews.
1988.
I could tell.
88 City Limits.
City Limits magazine.
City Limits, a classic.
City Limits?
I don't know what happened to them.
They're extinct now, aren't they?
Apparently, at the at the time, they were cutting edge.
Yeah. Were they?
Allegedly.
Yeah, no, they were.
They were cutting edge. They were like Time Out, City Limits.
They were very ungenerous to Cool for School.
We weren't new romantics. So allegedly we weren't in.
But yeah, you mean you've outlived, well, not all of them, because there are papers still around that probably...
Well, we're working on them too. It's just...
Oh, don't worry, their day will come.
Yeah.
We've done all the shows that were around that time. Now we're after the media.
Even the BBC building we recorded in, that's gone.
Yeah,
do you realise that's gone? The rehearsal room has gone. Yeah. The 7th floor rehearehearsal room where we used to rehearse,
that building's gone.
Where was it?
The BBC in North Acton.
It's now all been redeveloped as apartments.
It's student apartments now.
Is it?
Yeah, the BBC in Manchester is now a car park.
Yeah.
Oxford Road.
That's gone.
Yeah. BBC Oxford Road.
Mate,
gone.
Did we work in this building?
Pardon?
Did we ever work in this building? You're right then, your job's safe.
You're fine, yeah.
Your job's safe.
Thank God for that.
But we're going to go back online and see if you had any reviews.
We were around at the time.
Empire?
No, we launched 1989, so we're you're older than us by a year.
The skin of your teeth.
I know, right? Did you ever think there was a time when, like, Red Dwarf wouldn't come back?
I think so, probably quite a lot.
I think when the BBC said, we don't want it, after series... Well, he was there after series 8, because series 8 got 8 million.
Yeah, they really
wanted
it.
But then we did go back and go, do you want to do more TV series? And he said, no longer attracted...
They said there was no longer an audience for it.
They no longer were interested in attracting the audience that we used to...
They were fulfilling
their science fiction remit with Torchwood and Doctor Who.
I think it was Hyperdrive.
Which was good.
I liked Hyperdrive.
I didn't.
I know you didn't.
I never watched it, so I won't comment.
I think you kind of got to watch something before you really make a decision.
Well, you say that.
In fact, you know, we've all got something to bring to this interview. Why don't you just bring a bit of silence?
No, the only reason I didn't like it was because it was another science fiction sitcom. Yeah. And I was still a little bit bitter.
This is a Nick Frost sitcom, right?
Yeah, it was good.
I remember that.
I thought it was fun.
And Miranda.
Miranda was in the cast, yeah.
I had lunch with Miranda a couple of years ago, and I was saying to her, I thought it was really, really good. I thought that would go on and do better. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was really, really good. It's similar to Red Dwarf in certain ways, but then again, it's set in space, so it's going to be, isn't it?
Yeah, but
I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
The only thing was, it wasn't done in front of an audience. It wasn't like a...
And like with all these things, you've got to give them a chance. You've got to support them.
We was lucky that we got commissioned for Series 2 halfway through actually filming Series 1. And at that time, you know, we had Hitchhikers, that was everybody's favourite sci-fi.
Sure.
And, you know, so we had to go up against that, which was a huge show. And, you know, so the fact that we're still here is a testament to Doug's writing, really.
Absolutely.
Rob's at the time, yeah.
And Rob, of course.
Yeah.
And none of us dying.
Yeah, that helps.
I mean,
you all have to take huge,
credit for not dying.
Congratulations on all these things, guys.
I
mean, you must be delighted about them all.
Yeah. There should be an award ceremony just for that.
It's still alive award. I quite like that.
I want to do Last of the Summer Dwarf. Give them an award. Yeah. They're still alive.
That's so we can see our young actors playing us.
Yeah.
That's what they all do now. They have a big hit show and they go backwards and they do a remake and make him young.
Like in Star Trek.
The
Star Trek films, right?
Porridge. They've just done Porridge with, you know, going back.
They have.
That's the other one. What's the other one?
Well, Open All Hours.
Who would play you as a younger man?
Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Of course he would.
Danny, remember that silence thing?
I know, Craig, but you know it goes in when it goes straight through. There's not much in between, Craig.
You have the new series. Should we talk about the new series?
Yeah, let's talk about the new series.
Right!
Yeah. Tell me what's happening in it. What's happening to the characters? Oh, you've got
notes.
I'm looking at my list so I can remember.
Because, you know, you reach an age where it all goes a bit fuzzy.
I've seen a picture where you're all like Crichton.
There is.
Yeah, there's an episode where we meet the Mechanoid Intergalactic Liberation Front.
Right.
Or MILF, for short.
Nice.
And And they think that we've kidnapped Crichton and turned him into our slave.
They think I'm a slave, yeah.
Right, okay.
Which, of course, he kind of sort of...
It's
quite a nice, you know, in terms of slave life, it's not that bad.
Yeah. They try and break his programming and punish
and
us.
Liberate him and punish them.
Yeah, so yeah. We all get turned into Crichtons.
And is this Crichton. Your guys' first time in the makeup?
Oh, yeah.
This was wonderful for you to finally have them go through it.
It's funny. No, it really wasn't. It really wasn't wonderful. It was an amazing episode, and I think they looked amazing in it, but I did feel for them. I mean, it's a tough to do it the first time. That's the crucial thing. When you put that mask on, you know, I have got used to it because I've been wearing it for a mere 28 years. But but it's the first time is still scorched in my memory. The first day I had it on, I just went, this is so weird. I can't cope with this. I don't know why did I say yes to doing this? This is
a nightmare.
And that's really what they had to go through and do quite a lot of, you know, a lot of scenes and a lot of long days in it. And it was... You know, it's not. You don't wish it on anyone. I wouldn't.
It's very
wish it
compassionate
on anyone,
so. Of you.
Well, I mean, I did. You know, I kind of they dealt with it amazingly well. They were all really brave. Chris got quite ill doing it on the first day.
Yeah, we were all a little bit ill,
and everyone was a bit worn out by it.
Well, it's not a great experience. I mean, it's very, very difficult actually. I used to rib Robert all the time. You know, going, oh, you've got two books out of it. Shut up, put the mask on, do your job. But honestly, after 2 days, I was like, wow, this is tough. Yeah. It got to one stage where the sweat's got nowhere to go or anything like that.
Right.
And I thought I was crying, and I actually wasn't crying. I was sweating out of my eyelids. It was the only way to
leak out.
It was sweating out of my eyelids. That
was many years ago, because the experience of wearing it has improved partly because of LED lights, strangely enough.
So
the TV studio isn't as hot. Our TV studio was always classically a very hot place because the lights are really hot and the new lights aren't hot. So, but back in the day, there was a time I remember the brilliant recording, the audience loving it and everything, and we're in between scenes and Craig said, hey, watch this, everybody. He made me tip my head sideways and sweat just pours out of your ear because your head is
sort of glass.
And but it was that weird thing where you can see an audience who are loving this show and it's brilliant. Sweat's come out of his ear and the whole mood went down. That's just horrible.
Honestly, I sweated so much that the mask started moving. He had to take
it down
again. It
does start sliding around on your head.
Sliding around top of your head.
Sloshing about.
But ironically, the idea came about because you guys suggested it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just thought we should...
It was a joke.
It was the end of a show. They both came in wearing...
This is from the previous series.
We got the makeup girls. We took a couple of spearheads that Bobby had obviously finished the series. His makeup artist sprayed his tone, and mine sprayed mine my tone. And we kicked the door into a production meeting going on downstairs
as Crichtons.
As Crichtons, I was doing it in a West Indian accent, and he was kind of just south of Liverpool,
the Wirral.
The Wirral.
I wanted to do it as a Crichton's dream, though. So Crichton sort of dreamt that he was human.
I was being compassionate.
I was saying, let's give Robert a week off. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'd have hated that.
It'll take the Mona levels right down, won't it? You know what I mean? Yeah. A more comfortable workplace. Give Robert a week off. We'll wear the masks and say at the end of it and say, see, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't know what you're moaning about. Yeah. Didn't work out like that. It was really quite difficult.
It turned out like a bad version of 12 Years a Mechanoid. Produced by Brad Pitt.
But the thing is, it's a brilliant episode. Now, all the other actors that are in that, the supporting cast are in it, are fantastic.
Amazing.
And, you know, there's a
James Buckley's in that.
James Buckley's brilliant at it.
It's quite cool because it's weird. The mask, you'd think it'd all just look like crying, but it takes on the contours of your face, so you can actually notice the person underneath it.
James
Buckley looks like James Buckley.
Yeah, it's so spooky looking at James Buckley. Because I forgot my line because I was just staring at him thinking, this is weird.
Yeah, it is very strange.
And he's staring straight back at you thinking, this is weird.
You know, he doesn't break. That guy doesn't corp, so he's just...
Does he not?
He's very good.
Bang on it all the time.
Yeah, he's very good.
It's weird filming in Pinewood as it is. I mean, me and Robert have been outside having a sneaky cigarette and like six stormtroopers have walked past and you're like...
Oh, is that where you are?
They were in the middle of Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah. You know, there's
lots of Star Wars.
Sometimes you look at the cigarette and think,
every building
there
is packed with Star Wars. They had about 50 white golf buggies, and we turned up with a Jaguar print pink one.
Like a, yeah. Well, like a little sea of amateurism in a whole... In a whole
production design just came to see the show.
And Craig was driving us to lunch in a pink... in a pink golf buggy.
Yeah,
I mean, you can see people just going,
"What are they doing here?
What the hell are they doing here?"
Tried to get on set and nick a bit of theirs, but I just wanted to nick something from the Millennium Falcon.
Someone
enjoy.
They've got more security than Donald Trump, mate.
Yeah. I bet they have. Yeah.
No names mentioned, but someone who was around did get a shot of it on his iPhone.
Was that person
the Millennium Falcon? Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't me.
I can't name names because he'd be arrested and taken to court. And,
sure.
And sentenced to serve on Red Dwarf for the next 5 years.
I bet they were the same, though, weren't they? Were they sneaking onto your set trying to steal bits from...
No, they openly came. No, they weren't trying to steal bits.
What happened?
Do you want to steal some of this for your movies? No, we're fine, thanks.
They had enough MDF. They had enough. Enough Formica.
Our egg boxes were far superior.
I'm sure they were.
We did gate crash Sir David Jason's set, didn't we?
Yeah, they were quite Red Dwarf fans, though, weren't they?
They were, they were nice.
Harris, of course, was the production designer for us on Back to Earth.
Yeah, that's it.
And he
that's
was right. The art of course he was, yeah. Yeah. In Star Wars.
Yeah, we did a... David Jason walk came. He was filming Open All
Next Door.
Next Door, so
okay.
He came and had a little walk around of the set. It's nice to see him.
Yeah. You
know. That's where we nicked Johnny Vegas from.
That's right, Johnny's in that
He was doing that.
So is he in the Crichton suit as well?
No. But he's in another episode.
That's where we nicked him.
He's in a complete...
Right, okay.
Complete pink policeman's outfit.
Yes, he's dressed in pink.
Yeah.
He carries
it's,
it well.
It's a theme.
It's a theme. Yeah. We like pink.
Gone from Red Dwarf to Pink Dwarf because we're all washed out.
Oh, no. No.
That's the strap line on the new poster.
Because we're all washed out.
It's like Samuel L. Jackson in The Kinsman. Pink.
And the go on.
And the first show, of course, is when they come across... a scientific research centre.
Are you trying to steer this conversation on to make some sense?
Show one, yeah. Where they've regenerated people from the past and cured evil.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah. Which is good, isn't it? It's handy.
I get to play guitar with Hitler, which is sort of quite a spooky...
A cured Hitler.
A cured Hitler.
He's a very nice Hitler.
Played by Ryan Gage, who plays it, like, brilliantly.
Yeah.
I think I was sitting next to Vlad the Impaler at dinner.
Yeah, you were sitting.
Vlad was there.
Vlad?
Yeah. Vlad was there, he was good.
What was still?
Joseph Stalin.
Hitler's been in the show before, right?
When they hung Winnie the Pooh.
But not doing this, never playing...
Never playing a soft rock with Dave Lister.
No.
He's doing a guitar duet with Dave Lister.
What do you do when the show is going out? Do you watch it? Do you... tweet along with it? Do you avoid it? I mean,
I'll give it a bit of a Twitter beforehand because it's quite interesting seeing the when they've been on
immediate
before.
Immediate responses.
It's just that, you know, you've got your little mentions list, and it suddenly it's going dip, dip, and then it suddenly goes, and it is amazing how I've now finally, after I don't know how many years, got proper broadband at my house, so it actually comes through. You know, it was in the past, there'd be just a spinning thing.
Oh, do you have a dial up?
Yeah. We don't have dial-up anymore. We used to.
Right, okay.
But, you know, so I see this, and it is extraordinary, the kind of the response. So it'd be good to see, you know, because it's been on the first episode's been online, hasn't it? People could watch
it's been online.
A lot of people have been
And we went to a premiere in Edinburgh as well.
Right, okay.
Where is it with an audience, so that was great.
I'll be gigging somewhere, so I won't watch it when it goes out on a Friday. But like everyone Thursday watches on Thursday. Sorry. Yeah. Oh, so I probably can see it then.
Yeah, Thursday, I think I can.
Thursday,
see
Thursday
it,
9 o'clock.
Yeah. The thing about it is people watch television differently these days.
Yeah, they do.
Do you know what I mean? It's like I watch most of my stuff on catch up. Yeah. So I can fast forward through the adverts.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't
want to just watch one at a time. You know, you get into this. Yeah. It's a new Netflix thing now where you want to gorge on something. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Of course,
I do.
I'd like to. You know, I'd probably wait and start. I'd prefer to watch all six back to back.
I mean, that's been weird today, where we've done interviews with people who've seen the whole series.
Yeah.
And they've come in and gone. It's a what was it they He said it was a classic series.
The classic series, going back to the early days.
Yeah.
To the days when they said we were no longer relevant.
Maybe if you reach
no longer relevant, you can't.
I'm actually only 12.
You become relevant.
You wouldn't change it, would you?
I think it is very relevant now. You never know. After about 4.5 months, yes, I would.
Right, okay. How long does it take to do a series?
Well, the last one, we did two series back-to-back, so that took about 5 months.
But we had a little bit of a break.
Christmas it was called.
Yeah, that's right.
Doug was very generous this year.
Yeah, he gave us 2.5 hours off.
That's good.
Look forward to
But it's quite an intense filming period when you're filming. It's kind of hard.
You don't do a lot else.
Do anything else, really.
12 shows. Because... one a week.
You know, you're kind of doing one a week. You're doing a rehearse. And then you've got to film all the OB stuff. You've got to film the stuff that you can't do in front of an audience. Then you've got to put a live show on in front of an audience, and you've got to rehearse all that. And it changes a lot, you know, in the workshop process. You know, like, well, that's not working. Go away and do something else. And, you know,
and we'll come back and think the scripts are right in the first place.
So the thing evolves, you know, and then you've got to learn all that. And
it's all the looks. Doug has to rewrite all the looks we do, don't you? It's all about the looks.
We're told today that all we need to do is look at one another.
We just have to look at one another. Someone said, you just have to look at one another. And it's funny. And so Doug said, I'm just going out now to write 30 minutes of looks. Yeah, there is a bit of actual script in between the looks occasionally.
Yeah, but that's the worst bit, isn't it?
And you're back in front of a studio audience as well. You stopped for a couple of seasons, is that?
No,
it was series seven.
And then we played it to an audience and then back to Earth because we couldn't afford an audience.
Yeah. Series 10 and 11.
And that was like a three-part, but our first journey on Dave, that was like a three-parter.
Yeah, the Blade Runner thing. Suddenly massively relevant again.
Yes, it's all come back.
But I love that story. It's just a case of...
I think it's better than the new movie, actually. I don't want to go and see it tomorrow. It just didn't go down that well
with the audience.
Is it not good, the new movie?
Our fans.
But back to Earth.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
I think it was because it wasn't filmed in front of an audience. Because I thought the story was great.
Yeah.
I mean, the concept was great. Actually, being able to go to Coronation Street and film on Coronation Street with us and stuff like that. And the whole idea that we're coming, that we arrive on Earth and we realise that we're characters in a sitcom, unless we find the writer to write some more episodes, we're going to cease to exist, and then we have to go and find ourselves in real life. That's a really cool story.
Audiences, you know, they don't really know what they want. They say, Uncle, when are you going to make the film? Crying about not making the film. And then, of course, we put out a series with no audience, and they don't like it. So what do you think the film's going to be? It's not going to have a So, you know, if you listen to the audience all the time, then we'd never make anything.
I think maybe...
I think your idea...
by the fourth wall, the fact that we broke the fourth wall. But we broke the fourth wall because basically we had a minute budget. And it was, what can we bring to the table that's free? Mm. And one of the things that we could bring to the table was Coronation Street.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like, wow, can we write a story involving Coronation Street? So it came out of that.
And it turns out you don't really break the fourth wall, right? Because by the end, it's all...
Yeah.
So you get away with it.
Yeah.
I think Doug's idea of doing a stage tour... because everyone's been going about doing the movie for years. You're going to do the movie.
Yeah.
Doing the movie as a stage play, I think, is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do the stage play as Red Dwarf the movie. Do you know what I mean?
Should we pause for this photograph?
No. Okay. It's supposed to look natural.
All right. Okay.
He's obviously not doing telly. He gives me tips all the time. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't be funny without him.
Does the film script exist as something you haven't just used us for episodes?
Yeah, I have picked bits out of it. In fact, there are bits out of it in 11 and there are bits out of it in 12.
Yeah, there are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, it was a brilliant script.
There were so many drafts of it, though, because I was constantly being told to rewrite it to make it more expensive or to make it cheaper. Yeah. So,
do you not just flip between the two, then?
Originally, it needs to be more expensive because it's not worth raising the money unless it's at least over 20 million. So all you go, okay, so you put loads of his effects in, blow it, it's 20 million, then they can't raise the 20 million. Can you do a cheap one that we can shoot in the garage? Can you do one for 12? Can you do one for 8?
Yeah.
And then everyone got sent to prison and then I stopped.
And then
one person got sent.
We could have done finger bobs. You know, you remember finger bobs?
Yeah, really quite
cheap. And stuff like hand puppets and stuff. Brilliant.
Yeah. What are your favourite eras of Red Dwarf?
favourite eras.
So yeah. Favourite series, or even like narrow it down to a favourite episode, or even further you know to what? A favourite line.
I'm enjoying the reboot, you know. I'm enjoying... Yeah, I thought 11 was... 10 was cool, 11 was better. I think 12 is just as good as 11. So I'm enjoying coming back to it as a more mature person who can actually... You know, enjoy the performances of my co-stars.
Well, I think the thing is, I definitely enjoyed doing series 11 and 12 the most of the actual process of making the show was most enjoyable. I think I can say that with all honesty. Because it was actually always, we always had a brilliant time. We always laughed a lot. But there was a time I found it really tough to do. And I think the things like the makeup, from my point of view, the makeup's improved. It's quicker to put on.
Right.
Still takes the same amount of time to get off, but it's quicker. Yeah. And so it feels. And we just had such a brilliant time together.
But really thinking about it, actually, and I want to think about it, series one and two were the best before he was in it.
Before
he was in it. Yeah. You know when it was, remember that, when it was really funny before he came and spoiled it?
And good fun, do you know what I mean?
Remember when we introduced the proper Crichton, the real Crichton? The real Crichton, that was the
David
one.
David Ross.
David Ross, the real Crichton. That's
he's a proper actor, isn't he?
He was a brilliant actor. Do you remember he jumped on the table once and said to me, "Are you legit?" I went, "That's right." I mean, mummy was married to me, dad. No, are you legit? Yes. He meant, has I been to drama school? I'm like, fuck.
And the fact that not one of us had been to drama school.
You look like you've been to drama school.
That's so funny. And no one in the room was at drama school, so everyone was just looking at him with daggers
crazy.
Yeah.
And? Yeah. None of us have been, true, none of us have been to drama school.
Drama school. I think you can tell.
I think you might be able to tell.
We can act.
More natural, right?
That's probably, we're hoping that's what comes
case,
across.
That's the case, I hope so.
Not a lot of deep.
The only time
skill.
I got to do drama school acting is when I did the Cat Darcy, and I got to wear jodhpurs and long
That's
boots.
That's true. That
and there
that
were lots of women with petticoats and gazebos and all of that.
Have you been watching this shit?
What, the show?
Series 7?
That was Series 7, and when we blew up the gazebo.
Oh, that was right.
And there was an army base.
We did it on an army raid.
It was
an
army
raid.
And all the armies, all the soldiers were living around the army base, right? TNT used or whatever it was.
It's because I wound Peter up. Peter Rugg was a visitor, and I said, "You never make your explosions." They're always deliberately.
Yeah, yeah.
They're always so timid.
And man,
but they didn't warn anyone.
They said
we can't warn anyone because if we warn them for this, we have to warn them every time we're going to blow something up.
Yeah, yeah.
Different time.
Long time ago.
This explosion. We were half a mile away.
I was across the
lake. You could feel the wave.
Yeah, yeah. Shot wave.
Mate, this massive tree instantly burst on fire. All the windows in the army base shattered.
People were sunbathing.
Yeah,
and having bits of wood.
Debris was landing on all these people.
If you look back, there's an interview I was doing in the trailer at the time, and that must be on.
It was absolutely crazy, the gazebo, the trailer went like this, the ground, it was a massive crater left by it, and the soldiers started climbing over the fence, and he was like,
a guy came
really
up, grabbed it. The guy grabbed the location manager saying, all the pictures have just come off me wall in the vest, in the bucket, you can swear, he grabbed the location manager and said all the pictures have just come off.
But the thing was that it was when you do it, you know, we've done it a few times where there's an explosion on the set, and it's flash powder and a bit of petrol.
So
it doesn't make any noise, it just goes boom, but then you put the sound effect of the explosion on afterwards. But this was flash powder, petrol, and about something like 20 meters of Semtex ribbon, which is the stuff that the Royal Marines would use to blow up a bridge, to blow the footings of a building. So the army went, "Oh, lose some of our ribbon, wrap it round." We didn't know what it does.
We were allowed to stand within like half a mile of
it. So it was a proper wartime, proper explosion. It wasn't like boom, like you do special effects.
I mean, you can tell, just look at the footage.
Yeah.
You just got to look at the footage and say that is not, that's proper.
Mm. Yeah. The tree burst on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. It blew the top of quite a few trees, but it blew the bits of... Because it was a kind of balsa wood and cardboard gazebo. It was a set gazebo. Yeah. And there wasn't even like... Sometimes after an explosion, there'd be sort of debris immediately around where it's all fallen apart. Yeah. No, there was nothing there. Everything of it was...
Nothing of the gazebo was in the same postcode.
That's true. There was enough small bits of wood to make about 50 packs of Swan Vestas. Just lying around. That was all that was left.
So you can be funny sometimes.
I didn't even need one of Doug's scripts for that.
No, so we've had some fun. Oh, and that's when we had a tank. We had a tank.
That was a tank that they used in James Bond.
It was the same tank they used in James Bond.
That was a shit Bond, though, wasn't it? You know,
yeah, it wasn't a good Bond.
No. Which Bond?
Goldeneye is the best Pierce Brosnan. You think Pierce Brosnan is better than...
No, I think Goldeneye is the best Pierce Brosnan Bond film.
I'm talking about the best Bond.
So do I take it there is a future for Red Dwarf after 12?
It's set in the future.
I hadn't put it up.
It's already been broadcast, but no one can remember. I think we probably are going to be
already hard at work.
Excellent, that's good to hear. And
I feel as though we've wasted your time.
Now? Not at all.
Are you sure?
Because I'm going to ask some things that now I want to ask.
You go ahead. Okay.
Which is about plot holes. And do people still talk to you about plot holes? Do they still come... I mean, so...
I can honestly say, I've never even heard the phrase plot hole. Lister got two appendix? Because he had two appendix.
He's a freak of nature.
What's the one that people do ask you about all the time?
I don't think there's one particularly.
He's got two appendix.
Listen, the way our show's scrutinised by geeks, and these guys don't miss nothing. Yeah. And I say scrutinised, they love doing that. They look for it.
Calm down. You frightened him
now. Hey, listen, this is not a business to be frightened in, mate.
He actually jumped back.
It's taken a sinister turn, this.
I think it's less so now. I mean, I think because the first time I remember meeting sort of real fans of the show, they just knew everything. They knew every line. They knew every beat of it, didn't they? But
okay, I'll give you a plot hole, if you like, from the first show of this series.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, please.
Oh. Yeah.
And it's how come Lister can play the guitar?
That's true.
Hey, Lister can... Lister can't play the guitar?
No, we've heard you play before.
You losers. What are you on about?
Yeah.
That's true. He's very good.
And if you think that's a problem, wait till you see show two, where he clearly can't play the guitar.
There you go.
But my defence is, it's Hitler who's doing all the guitar.
And he's miming.
And he's just doing some old shit.
No, Lister was inspired by Hitler. That's the headline.
He knows one song.
Yeah.
What's right? It's the first song he's ever learned.
True. He learned it when he was a Boy Scout.
Or the version we're hearing is what Lister's hearing.
Perfectly legitimate.
Plot holy explainy. And we didn't do it because we thought it was dead funny.
Yeah. I reckon the whole of the 12 series has just been what Lister's hearing, and one day he's going to wake up and he's going to be on his own in deep space with no one around but him. No,
that is dark.
Cool. Yeah.
Wow, that is dark.
We like dark.
I think he'll be glad he woke up.
Which show five
show
is?
Show five, we were talking M-Core. Dark and Doctor Whoey.
Yeah, yeah, someone said it's a bit Doctor Who-ish.
Yeah, M-Core's a really cool episode, but I think it's kind of the most close to science fact that we've done in this series, because, like, you know, a lot of the stuff that we did years ago was science fiction, which has kind of come to science fact, but this one is all about we upgrade the ship and all of a sudden we can only see things made by one company. We can only see products that were designed and sold by M-Core, and everything else is invisible.
Right.
You know, so it's a bit like, you know, it's like Google, Amazon, all that kind of stuff. You know, if you buy an iPhone, you can only buy the iPhone upgrade, everything, you know, the charger, everything goes with this, you know, everything is just made for you to use Apple products with it.
Sure.
It's kind of like that kind of thing. I think we're not that far away from that M-Core episode.
So then the question becomes, what is on board that's been made by M-Core? And M-Core own a lot of things. So photographs, printers,
shavers, the rest.
Yeah.
Where this is still a comedy, right? This sounds terrifying.
But it's like, you know, seeing Lister shave with an invisible razor.
Yeah. And also, there's a great scene with Robert holding up various products. Can you see this? Can you? And the and then there's the line about, I hope that's an electric toothbrush.
some of the items that Crichton holds up have a slightly dubious budget.
That is genius, man.
and that's when the cat opens a beer, an invisible beer, and it spurts into my face and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Now, is that a plot hole, though?
Why?
A plot hole.
Because the can is invisible, but you can see the liquid.
Yeah, no, but it's the branding, isn't it?
That's, the branding that's making it invisible.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got an answer for everything.
Covered.
Whenever we get asked, because I always want, when people do ask, you know, if you meet someone and they ask about something about the plot, I'm just desperate for Doug to be there going, yeah, no, you're right about it, Doug. Can't see the branded can, but they can, of course, see the liquid.
You should try what I do and just say, get a life.
I just say, ask Doug Naylor.
Yeah, I would say, ask Doug.
You've obviously been in this a long time now, as we've covered. Are there things that you regret or would do differently if you came to them now from anything in the series?
I wouldn't have had him in it.
Yeah, okay.
I wouldn't have had me in it, or him, or me. I would have done a two-hander with me and Chris Barry. Took all their money. Listen, got to live in the Bahamas.
I was much happier in musical theatre.
I bet you were.
I got more respect. I got more credibility because all mine was life. There was no retakes. And now I get shoved in with these actors who'd never been to stage school.
To drama school.
Never been to drama school. You know, it was
we're
a nightmare.
Not legit.
30 years working with a tap dancer. What can you say?
Those
were the days.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
You know, but dwelling on those, you know, the past is the past. You have to go on.
The hollyhock box.
That was class.
But seeing that for the first time, like, come on, you haven't even tried.
The actual prop.
Hollyhock.
Seriously? It's like, wow.
You know when you go to your dressing room, you're crying in the mirror going,
it's so bad. It's so bad. But actually, it worked for the gag. With hollyhock on it.
So what came first? Did the gag come first or did the prop come first?
The prop came before the prop funnier.
I was saying the other day, I think actually because those couple of series were actually so crude in terms of the sets and the props and all that, it kind of, we got sympathy. Yeah. In a sort
sympathy
of
laughs.
Oh, yeah,
sympathy
yeah.
laughs.
And if we'd have gone out and not, it would never have happened, but been lit really slick and cool, I think there would have been a barrier up, whereas people felt sorry for us in a good way.
you just described my marriage.
It's clever, and then of course it gets slicked up a bit in series three. You know,
There's certainly times when I've been, you know, watching on bits of Red Dwarf on my own, and I've just suddenly gone, oh, because I'll hear a flat, like an English vowel.
Oh, right.
So Crichton will be saying. Yeah. Sir, we've got to get over there. Oh, God, it's suddenly like, it's just horrible. Why didn't I do that? So that's the only thing I've got. Why didn't I do that? I didn't hear that at the time.
Now you know how we feel.
So I feel sorry for the rest of the crew.
Do you think the show gets enough credit? Because I think it's one of the smartest comedies written. I mean, there's the line that all, I'm sure you do.
I really do.
One of the lines that always comes to mind is there's one about the alarm and changing the bulb, which I think is one of the smartest observational comedy moments I've ever come across.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's something about being the underdog and, you know, people saying that, you know, it's not that good and all of that is because if we do fail, they can't say anything about it. It's just, I told you, that's all they can say.
Yeah.
But generally, after 30 years, it's kind of going to sound hollow, isn't it? And when they say, you know, I was right, how crap it was. They just don't talk.
From an audience point of view, it has been a huge success. It's the biggest rated comedy show on BBC Two ever.
Ever? Yeah. That will never get beaten.
Biggest rated comedy show on UK TV ever.
Yeah.
And it's sold more DVDs and videos than any comedy television show, apart from Fools and Horses, when we're just behind Fools and Horses.
Right.
So that's not a cult.
So, you know.
So it's not a cult. Yeah, if it is,
it's
a massive cult, a bit like him. But
I always say, I hate science fiction.
But it's
it wasn't trendy with the media, so the media called it a cult, and they kind of they gave it bad reviews at first, and then when they realised, shit, everyone likes it, they'd call it this much improved series.
Yes, but
we filmed it all at the same time, you know, Bed. Do you know what I mean? And then they start backpedaling. Yeah. And then after a while, they kind of just ignored it.
Yeah. And then called like, what it.
And then
it,
sort of
it,
creeped back. You've got 8 million people watching. It's been cool.
Yeah. You creep it. And then you think, oh, someone's just requested an interview. You go, hold on a minute. They just hated that last year. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but it's quite interesting because they don't know quite how to approach people like Craig.
I think there's a British thing as well.
They think he's going to have a go at them.
How to approach me, but not you.
It's my fault, Ben.
It's all your fault.
No, because he does that opening, you know, monologue in front of them. So if you did that monologue of the city limits.
Oh, right.
Critique, so they fear him.
Yeah. Oh, the review from the start.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So imagine they think this is what I'm going to get this first. You know,
I don't really forget things. Right.
We call him Elephant Man for two reasons.
I can use it to pick up buns. Yeah. Anyway,
don't mention bread or ear in the same sentence.
He was quiet for a little bit there back then. It was getting really good, wasn't it?
I can pick up buns. I'm sorry, I'm stuck on that. I've seen it do it. You don't live that down.
Chris Barry's still traumatised, by the way.
That's why he wouldn't be here.
That's why he's not here.
Yeah, we miss Chris. How is Chris?
I know. Chris is very well. We've just seen him.
Yeah, just seen him.
Yeah, he's there. Yeah, he's on top form.
Doug, obviously, you're writing on your own now.
Yes, yes.
But how much input do the guys have? Because obviously they've been playing these characters for so long. Do you let them have any input? No,
we don't want input.
Fair enough.
Why offer crap writing to a good writer?
Yeah. Oh, shit, sorry. I think that it's fair to say there are tiny end of scene, one word sometimes, or one little phrase that when we're rehearsing, it just comes out and Doug says, oh, that's good, keep that in. Yeah. But, I mean, we're talking one or two per series.
I mean, right. Minuscule. It's
99.9% scripted.
What's so terrific, though, is when we do a read-through or when we block a scene, you can kind of... Everyone knows what's working and what's not working.
That's the thing.
So then it's like, okay, let me go off and I'll fix that.
Yeah, you wouldn't...
And I had a pattern because I had a flat that was... 6-minute drive to Pinewood Studios.
Right.
Moved in with myself, which was fun. And and so I would get up and do rewrites at 5 o'clock, and then I'd rewrite from, say, 6 o'clock through till 10 o'clock, and then, or just 10 to 10, then drive in, and then go new pages.
They'd give us that new page stuff, yeah.
Right, okay.
So it worked really well, actually.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. No, it was great. And that's, I mean, I think that is very much a testament to the quality of the show, is that when we read the first scripts, and we love them, I mean, we just think this is a brilliant idea, this is great. And then they start to, even in my brain, I get a hold of some of the lines, and you're just getting to that point, and then Doug comes in with a load of new pages, completely different. And the annoying thing is it's always
funnier.
Much better.
It's always
funnier. And it's, you know, that's...
Well, sometimes you've got to change it because we can't afford...
Can't afford to do it, whatever.
Originally. Yeah. Oh, we can't find, you know, the right location. We can't find this. Yeah. We can't afford that. So it's got to change. So you just get on with it.
Yeah, okay. I generally phone him up and tell him what he's doing wrong.
Yeah, that's good of you.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Make it funnier.
That one time, phone me at 1 o'clock, oh man, I've read the scripts. This is not my part, it's not funny enough.
Yes.
Okay, all right, man, I'll say it. Yeah, but it isn't. No, let me go to sleep and then I'll
To be
it.
Fair, I was pissed.
Oh, you were so pissed. And to be fair, you were wrong, actually.
I'm because, always wrong when I'm pissed. Ask my wife.
It's funny.
You'd be writing alone for, I mean, half the show's life now as well. Longer in actual time as well. I'm talking about in terms of series. Which do you find easier, or is it more difficult to write on your own because you've got no one to bounce off?
Well, actually, that's not quite true because I work closely with my son Richard, who was one of the two producers on it.
Right, okay.
So... we sort of move in together, and so a lot of that goes back and forth. So
Richard's the George Michael of the operation.
Yeah. Right, okay. Yeah.
Doug's the Andrew Ridgely, you know.
No, he's actually got a script.
He is very, very good.
Yeah,
he's got
a script in with.
Does that mean Red Dwarf can continue without you? Surely not.
I hope so, but I don't think he wants to write Red Dwarf. He wants to do his own things. Yeah. But so there's that, but there's a great freedom as well. being on my own as well. So yeah. it's you know. And
can I just add that when we started Red Dwarf, Richard wasn't born.
Yeah,
that's true. It's right. Shocking.
None of our children were.
None of our children were born. Yeah. Richard is what? He's 20.
He's late 20s now. Yeah.
28.
My son's 29. He wasn't born. Yeah,
he wasn't born. And this guy's producing us, telling you what to do, mate. That's it. Yeah. Dan, that ain't funny. Right?
No, that's not. That's
he's lovely, that is though. So not true.
No, he's lovely.
Calm down. You're getting aggressive again.
You're frightened.
He's looking frightened again.
Yeah. I wasn't born.
Were you not born?
And look, someone with that bushy a beard wasn't born when we started. That is terrible.
I was. Six, I think.
Right,
well, there you go.
It's weird because people who weren't born, this is a weird thing, is that people who weren't born come up to me and they're big fans of the show and stuff. And I say, when were you born? They say, like 1989. You think, oh my God, you weren't born.
But that's wonderful, right?
Yeah, it is.
You don't just have this one group of fans who just gets older with you, that you'll go into new generations and it'll just continue.
But it does make you feel like an old fart sometimes, you know? Yeah. And I'm getting a lot of this coming up now. Oh, can I have a selfie? Can I have a selfie? I say, yeah, no problem. My mum loves you.
Yeah.
And he gets me. Granny loves you.
I got my gran last year. A very beautiful young woman ran up to me and said, oh God, I can't believe it's you. Can I take your picture? Oh, this is brilliant. Did a selfie and I was kind of going, oh, this doesn't happen every day. And she said, my gran loves you, and ran off. She didn't see the
grands crest can be young.
They can be. She's probably got a really hot gran.
But it's interesting because age is just about, you know, an attitude and what you think.
It is.
And Hugh Hefner, for example.
Hugh, what a great example.
Who died at 91, and his wife was 31.
Mm.
That would have meant that you were your second wife.
So my second wife has just been born now.
Just been born
is
now.
Is a tiny baby. That is quite shocking. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
There's a baby that I'm going to marry in 30 years.
No, I used to do a gag like that. I mean, stand-up show, didn't I? I said, I'm doing really well. You know, if things go right, my next wife hasn't been born yet.
He was 91, she was 31.
31, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's quite an age gap, isn't it?
That
thing where you're supposed to double it and add 7. That's like double it and add
just
59. Yeah.
Unreal.
I can't be bothered now.
Yeah, that means that's exactly. I'm hats off to you. I couldn't be asked.
I mean, I'm craning him on to
trying to spoon his bloodless phallus into it.
I think we'll stop now.
You did want to do a Red Dwarf interview, didn't you?
That's such good writing. That's phallus. That's wonderful.
Spooning of bloodless phallus.
Hey, Doug, I want to see that in the next series.
Listen
to that line.
I just bought a Kindle.
Guys, thank you very much for coming on the Empire Podcast.
It's been
a pleasure having you, and good luck with the new series.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll be a huge success.
No, cheers, guys.
I think it's down to about 40 seconds.
Yeah,
I reckon. Yeah.
Can we just apologise for wasting it?
Not at all. We've got 50 minutes.
And certainly,
people usually run out of the door.
Spooning used to be one of the most innocent occupations. Suddenly, it's not.
Craig, I'm going to be smiling all the way. I love it.
God.
I love it. Oh, wasn't that one of Norman's shows?
Okay, so now that lot's out of the way, it's time for us to have a little trip down memory lane, and we're going to be chatting not specifically about Series 12, and that's only partially to do with the fact that I've only seen one episode, and I don't know where you guys are on Series 12.
I've seen the three that have been broadcast.
Okay, as we record this, Series Episode 4, Mechocracy, is about to come out.
Tonight, right?
Yeah, tonight. So you'll have just seen that if you're listening to this. You've seen that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm not up to date because I've been watching The Good Place. Sorry.
Yeah, this is true.
Not the smeg place.
No.
But it raises an interesting point. We'll talk about Red Dwarf in a second and how it all entered our lives. And we're all big, big fans to varying degrees. And there was a point in my life where I was utterly obsessed with Red Dwarf. But I moved away from it. And I think it's because the quality of the show, for me, tapered off. Certainly, I don't know whether most dwarfers will think this, after Red Dwarf 6, for me, is when the quality became variable, shall we say.
No disrespect to Doug Naylor, but when Rob Grant left, I think something left with it.
Yeah.
Because he left.
It was the jokes.
It could have been the jokes. But Six was an interesting one because Six was a very rushed series. Like they had to shoot it, they had to write it and shoot it in very short order. So a lot of people think that Six is where it went wrong. But I completely disagree. I think Six has loads of great stuff in it. In fact, one of my favourite episodes is in Series Six. So
okay, which one?
Yeah, which would be Rimmerworld.
Oh yes, yes, yes. And
like a lot.
So after Series 6, I kind of stopped watching, really. I would watch the odd episode of 7 and 8, but I kind of lost track of it, and obviously then it stopped. And it came back with Back to Earth. And I remember very distinctly, Nick and James, you, all three of us, going around to Nick's house to watch Back to Earth, and we were excited about it.
Yeah.
And then we watched it, and
it was in many ways the Blade Runner 2049 of that particular year.
In what way?
In that it was Blade Runner, but from what year was it?
2009.
It was Blade Runner 2009.
Yeah.
But
Blade Runner 2049 has been well received, and Back to Earth was not well received.
Admittedly, the parallels are minimal.
Okay. Especially in our little section of Nick's flat. Yeah.
But it was. I mean, it is Blade Runner, isn't it? The whole thing is kind of a riff on Blade Runner. That's the thing.
Back to Earth.
Back to Earth. Yeah. Okay. It riffs heavily on Blade Runner.
I just remember them going to Coronation Street and.
It riffs on Coronation Street too, but yeah, there's a whole Blade Runner threat.
And it being absolutely terrible on the level.
It was quite long, as I recall. Yeah. It was like either a double episode or felt like it.
It's three episodes.
It's a big old thing. I think the problem is, but it had lost its way long before that. Like, I wasn't particularly offended by Back to Earth because I think, you know, seven was ropey. It was like Six, but not funny. And then Eight was when they resurrected the Red Dwarf crew, and that was lamentable. And, you know, and so Back to Earth kind of followed on from that. They rallied, though, with 10. Like, when they went back to a regular series format, 10's really has got some solid stuff in it.
With not Dave, yeah.
Yeah, not Red Dwarf at its vintage best, but it's actually quite solid. 11, I think, was lesser. And I think 12's probably on a par with 11, but I haven't seen enough of it yet to say.
Okay.
But 10 has some good stuff.
Certainly the episode I've seen of 12, because basically what happened was, knowing we were doing this podcast, I went down a little Red Dwarf rabbit hole yesterday, and I started watching... I basically watched all of series 1. I'm not going to say series 1, and most of series 2. Then I was going, I'll pick out great episodes that I really, really love. So Polymorph and, you know, Rimmerworld and Quarantine and episodes like that. And I never really got around to it. But it's made me kind of realize, oh God, this is what I really loved about the show. And so rather than focus on the fact that it had a really ropey middle section where 7, 8, Back to Earth wasn't that great, I thought this podcast would be us talking about why we fell in love with Red Dwarf, what we loved about Red Dwarf. And Johnny, let's start with you. When did Red Dwarf enter your world? You're a little bit younger than the rest of us
around
this table.
Yeah, so I saw it. So season 6 had... I mean, I think I'd actually seen Camille, which is the opening episode of Series 4.
The Casablanca episode.
But it really hadn't really registered in me until it was all repeated. You'll remember this in 1993. From the start, the first 6 series were on every single Friday night on BBC Two at 9 o'clock. And they did it right from the work. So it was 36 weeks in a row. And that's when I, you know, started watching it at the start then, because people who had seen it at school, I was like first year of high school, which is year 7?
Don't look at me.
I have no idea. You're strange English customs are
lost. I went to school
in
1843, so.
I think it's year 7 in modern money, but it was first year
of
high school. And lots of people there were watching it or were excited it was starting, so... because I didn't want to feel left out. I was excited it was starting, and then I did fall in love with it.
Nick, when did you first dwarf?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact date, the year, but it was at school, and it was those sort of Series 3, Series 4 episodes, I think. Those are the first ones I remember. I remember the curry monster vividly. Is that Polymorph?
The curry monster, no. The curry monster is the...
DNA.
It's DNA, yeah. It's the transmogrification of Lister's Madras.
Right, yeah. That is genius. And the only thing that can kill a curry monster is beer.
I know.
And Legion and Mr. Flibble and all this stuff. I just kind of loved that it was quite hard sci-fi ideas, but just mixed up with just ridiculous silliness and very British kind of sensibility.
Yeah. Well, Six in particular, I think, has an interesting format because they mix up sci-fi elements with sitcom elements. Because I think, as I recall, they'd felt the season 5 was a bit too Monster of the Week, so they tried with 6 to kind of vary it slightly more.
Six as well, Red Dwarf isn't there, so they've got this...
it's all Starbug. It's just gone full TARDIS. Like, it's massive in Starbug suddenly when it used to be just a cockpit.
I mean, well, it gets even bigger, right, in Series 7. seven. In seven, seven, it's just huge. But yeah, so they've got this, sort of things that happen every week where they, you know, they're down on supplies, so they're having to really like fight for their lives, and it adds like. I mean, is it fair to say that Red Dwarf has tension when you know none of them are ever going to... But do you know what I mean? It's certainly more tension than you ever felt when... Well,
they introduced arc stories to it, which they'd never had before. Like, it had a through line, whereas it used to be very much kind of in that sitcom format where it's just this happens and then this happens. It was very self-contained.
Well, yeah, rewatching Series 1 was really fascinating to me because you can see the show wants to become... And you can, you know, but it feels very much, Series 1 feels to me like they were going for, like Grant and Naylor were going for Steptoe and Son in space. Mm. And what's intriguing about that is how, you know, obviously it can't be reliant on special effects that much because they obviously didn't have that great a budget. So it's very much about the characters. And it's always intrigued me how far they were willing to push Rimmer in particular of being unlikable and really cold and supercilious and overly fastidious and... All those traits, and having him, you know, grow, I guess, to an extent over the series. But right from the beginning, it's the really antagonistic relationship between Lister and Rimmer is there, and then they drop the cat in. The cat's,
I mean,
usually
the cat's
off.
Barely a character in the first series.
He's problematic. It's funny. I compare Red Dwarf a lot to Blackadder in that, like, it starts out and it's not very good. I mean, the first series isn't very good.
I would argue with that. I think it made me laugh quite a lot. It's got some really good jokes.
It's gently amusing, but episodes like Waiting for God is lamentable. There's some genuinely.
What's the one with the confidence and paranoia which has a very young Craig Ferguson doing his, I believe, his first on-screen appearance as Lister's confidence, and I was watching it going, that's Craig Ferguson. He's the size of a house compared to what he is these days. And as he admits himself, it was during his drinking days. But with a terrible accent.
I don't know. Me Squared is the only first series episode that I genuinely think is good.
Okay.
I enjoy that a lot. And then series two, I should say, it's more of the same. It's better. It's more solid. There's some good episodes in there. Obviously, they introduced Crichton. But for me, it was, and this is when I first came to the show. It was in 89 when series three came out. Like that.
Really?
Was,
yeah. You weren't there from the beginning?
A friend of mine introduced me to, said, you got to watch Red Dwarf. It's really good. Season three was starting. Series three was starting. I keep doing this. I started with three, and then I bought the VHS tapes of series one and two.
Really?
Because I bought them all. I was obsessed with it, including the Smeg Ups and the Smeg Outs, which were the
outtakes. I had those as well.
Yeah.
Did you buy the books?
I bought everything.
There was a book I had with two of them in.
There was Better Than Life, and there was the original
Red Dwarf
story.
So
I went back and watched the other ones afterwards. But three for me, I think, is really where that's the Blackadder 2 of Red Dwarf. That's where it finds its feet. It gets a new title sequence. It gets a new tone. It gets new sets. It gets Robert Llewellyn. And it gets a proper logo.
Who played the original Crichton?
David Ross.
Yeah. He was unavailable for series three.
I mean, and thank God, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God, because he was terrible.
He wasn't terrible. It was a very, very. I don't think he was terrible.
Well, it was a different character. It was the Edmund Blackadder from Blackadder to Blackadder from Blackadder 2. It was a very different.
IMDb says he's in an episode of series 12, so I'll be fascinated to see. He did reappear. I think he was the voice of a talkie toaster at one point as well. So they're very aware that they had this role that turned into something, and they turned it into something without him. And you know, so
well they said it was becoming hard to write for with just having those two characters and the cat who was kind of like a comedy foil. They said they were running out of ideas. They needed an extra element.
It absolutely would.
But three is also where Norman Lovett obviously went, and we got Hattie Heyridge as Holly. All of which is done away within a colossal info dump in a like 10,000 mile an hour crawl at the beginning that you can't possibly read unless, as I did, you pause it, go through it word by word.
Is it true that Alan Rickman auditioned to play Rimmer? Because this story is everywhere. It's all over the internet that Hugh Laurie auditioned and Alan Rickman auditioned, but didn't get the role. So that's a kind of...
I love Chris Barry, but how bad were they in their auditions to not get the role? I mean, he's amazing, but Alan Rickman...
You can imagine Rickman is romantically on you.
You can, yeah.
He's far too charming, isn't he?
Maybe he can play it. Like, he's got that range. I think he has that in him.
I can see Rickman as Rimmer. I can see Chris Barry as Hans Gruber.
Barry as Gruber, yes.
Being dropped from the Nakatomi Plaza.
Set in the Leisure Centre.
It's amazing.
The Leisure Centre.
Red Dwarf was huge for me growing up. Absolutely huge for me. I got into it from episode one. I just remember, you know, watching it. And when did the first go out? 1989?
89 was 3, so 87.
End of 87, isn't it?
Something like that. Yeah. And it was absolutely right in my sweet spot. It was a sort of humor, kind of, you know, a little bit adult, a little bit risque, the sort of thing my parents absolutely hated, so which made me love it a bit more. A bit like I was really in that sort of, I was, what, 10, 11 years old, and I was, you know, loving Python at that point, and stuff that I wasn't really meant to be watching. And I loved Red Dwarf as a result as well. And like James, and I'm sure like Johnny and Nick as well, I owned the videos, I owned the Smegups. I love the fact that it introduced a new word into my swearing vocabulary, smeg, and you could get away with it. It was fine because no one really knew what it meant. And I also, I loved the characters, and I bought the books as well. But I also did something. I once for English, we were set a creative writing an essay, and I decided to write a Red Dwarf essay, a Red Dwarf story. And this thing ran for 40 pages. I wrote a 40-page Red Dwarf short story / novella that was a month late by the time I handed it in. Anyone who's had to work with me at Empire might sympathize with that. Hey,
please tell me this was not erotic fiction.
No, it wasn't. It was. I've lost it. I'd love to go back and read it again because, you know, I can only remember things. I was given a 10 just for effort.
out of 10,
thankfully. And I loved Red Dwarf so much, and I just wanted to, you know, write something with those characters. It was a lot of fun. I remember there was the plot revolved around them finding an orange hole, so clearly I'd just seen white hole, and I was like, what's now, there's an orange hole, it's a different color. And they stopped JFK's assassination. I remember that, but that's apart from that, I don't remember anything else about it.
So Doug Naylor stole the first episode of Series 7 off you then?
I know, that's a weird thing.
Wow.
Who knew? But yeah, lost, I'm afraid.
It was around the same time I was really into Douglas Adams and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I think that's obviously, there's kind of a parallel between those two things, the sensibility, very kind of British sensibility, but in space with all these surreal things happening. But yeah, that's all I had to add.
So so do you have a favourite episode? Anyone? Jimbo, I think you probably processed them all.
I mean, where to even begin? Well, the first episode I saw was Backwards, which to this day I think is a masterpiece of physical comedy. It's genius. The whole thing is well put together. That's kind of what drew me into it. I said, this is amazing. Yeah. The whole sort of setup and then the big unrumble at the end.
Yeah.
It's genius. I thought that was very nice.
It has an amazing... We watched it last night because I was going through... And you're absolutely right. Series 3, the leap in confidence.
Yeah.
For them is just astonishing. Going from, you know, series 1 and series 2, which explored some pretty high concept ideas, but just didn't have the budget to really do anything with them. And then series 3, Crichton's a huge comedic injection right from the off. But the idea behind Backwards is phenomenal. I'd love to know how long it took Grant and Naylor to work that one out. Mm. And, you know, it doesn't entirely hold up if you really subject that idea to some scrutiny. It doesn't
vomiting
really hold up.
Vomiting pints into glasses. Yeah.
Like, how would that society actually work? But it has an amazing joke that made me laugh a lot last night. It's when Cat goes to the toilet in the bushes, and that amazing bit where Danny John-Jules just comes up from behind the bushes, goes along with his... and then walk slowly, gingerly to Starbucks. Yeah, really, really funny.
Marooned is one of my favourites as well. There's a kind of double header. The one where Rimmer and Lister get marooned on the ice planet and they have to burn the soldiers, and the bit where he cuts out the guitar-shaped thing in the camphorwood chest, you know. Just, it's a really nice character moment.
How does the hologram smell the camphorwood?
Well, yes, all of this outrageous. Is true. But they were never particularly precious about how the light bee worked, how any of that. I mean, it didn't really matter, did it? But
no.
That's a really nice moment between the two of them. And it's got that brilliant payoff at the end. We're going to do to Lister what Alexander the Great once did to me.
I mean, it's a great payoff if you understand the context of that's been set up earlier.
Yes.
Nick's there now going, I have no idea what you've gone.
He was Alexander the Great's chief eunuch. That was the...
Isn't that one of Alan Rickman's lines from Die Hard?
You could have been. You're going to do to Lister what Alexander... Yeah.
I'm going to put a shout in for Quarantine, which I think is series 5.
Mr. Flibble
is triumphant. That's with his genius. Hex vision.
So genius.
I once went to a Halloween party as not as Mr. Flibble, because that would involve a giant penguin suit, but as a person holding Mr. Flibble.
Were you in a giant red and white check gingham dress and army boots?
I didn't go full gingham.
So you just had a penguin hand puppet.
I found a kind of... I wore some kind of sheet. It wasn't a particularly...
You were a ghost holding a penguin.
Yes, pretty much.
I mean, Time Slides is another great one. Just that, with the whole tension sheet when he goes down, he sees the younger Lister. But the whole the interplay between older and younger Lister, that's brilliant as well. It's so good. So good some of those ones are. The Last Day was fun as well, which introduced that whole Silicon Heaven concept. And you had Hudson 10, like, you know, the, when he unzips his robot cock and smashes a brick with it. I mean, it's, I mean, the comedy is not what I would call highbrow, but it's very, very funny.
What's the one with the giant statue of Lister taking a piss?
Oh, that's Time Slides, isn't it?
Is
when
it
he
time
goes
slides?
Back and it's it urinates champagne into a fountain. It's because he's invented the tension sheet and he's now super wealthy.
But I wasn't afraid to use those comedy as a framework to explore some decent ideas and some interesting progressive ideas. I mean, the final episode of Red Dwarf 2, you know, is all about sexual politics and male female gender swap ideas, which are really fun and interesting, especially watching it in today's society with what's going on at the moment in Hollywood. I thought it's pretty ahead of its time in many, many ways, and still very, very funny. They never forgot to put the jokes in. I mean, some of the jokes you can see coming a mile away,
but most of the jokes still work.
Yeah, but its joke per minute ratio is still pretty high, I would say.
And I think there's a lot more misses than hits in the recent series. It's not quite as nailed on. I mean, Rimmer in particular, I always thought was the funniest character. He just destroyed me. Chris Barry is a complete genius in this role.
Yeah.
Chris Barry, formerly of Spitting Image, an extraordinary impersonator.
Yes. Wasn't he on the last Red Dwarf special we did?
He was indeed, yes. It was,
and you did. You did your Crichton.
I did my Crichton.
Pretty good.
I did my Crichton, and he just went zip. And he proceeded to do every member of the Red Dwarf cast in order. And I was like, yeah, right, fine.
He does his Crichton in, I think, episode 2 of the new series, series 12.
Okay.
And it will get turned into.
I really want to see that one.
It will get turned into droids, and he's the only one who does an impression of Crichton. So it's a bit weird. It doesn't make sense, but it's very funny anyway.
But no, it's because he's turning into a Crichton quicker than everyone else, right?
I guess that's
that's the device. That's the excuse for it.
Craig Charles looks very strange as a droid. His head is very disturbingly shaped, whereas all the other droids look completely normal.
They
look more Crichton-y. He just looks like a Rubik. I don't know. There's just things coming out.
Oh, he's got a lot of hair to hide, right?
Must be why. Yeah,
but it was interesting. You go back. Red Dwarf starts 1988. And this thing has always struck me about it, because not that much is made of it, but it was a sitcom at the end of the 80s that had three main cast members, and obviously Norman Lovett as well as Holly. Two of them were black, and nothing is made of that. And I always loved how progressive that show was. And that, you know, Lister, who is, you know, the hero of the show, absolutely incontrovertibly the hero of the show and the protagonist of the show, is a black guy, and that was always something I found really admirable. It sounds horribly PC, obviously, but
it's true. And given when it came out, that was unusual. And also, I mean, they replaced Holly. Remember the episode where they replaced Holly with Queeg?
Queeg? Oh,
yes,
the sort of drill sergeant guy.
Series 2, I want to say. That's a really good episode as well.
Yeah, Queeg, Series 2. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's Series 2.
He's like the ball-busting version.
Yeah, he's the ball-busting version.
He's
of
the
Holly.
Apone of...
In fact, he is actually just Holly having a laugh.
I mean, that is an amazing ending.
That's right, it's a brilliant payoff. He goes, I am Queeg. And he's been forcing Rimmer to do exercise, and he's like, he made him do like a 10-mile run. It's like he passed out after the first 500 yards, and he makes him run the rest of it unconscious.
Amazing. It's like the little moments that I remember. There's an episode, I have no idea which episode, but they're going through.
It sounds like a challenge, right?
Okay, if you guys can identify it, they're basically going down a corridor with some guns, and there's something scary happening, and Rimmer is basically doesn't know whether it's safest at the back or at the front, so he's just running in circles.
Inquisitor.
Is that Inquisitor?
That's the Inquisitor, yeah.
And he just makes them all walk around him constantly. Yeah.
I love that, and I think I've actually incorporated that to paintball and laser quest.
I mean, I've said it's Inquisitor, which I should check.
There are actual Red Dwarf fans who would probably listen to this podcast who've switched off already because they're going, these guys are idiots. One guy hasn't seen
it
for years.
I'm confessing I'm an idiot, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. One guy hasn't seen it for years, and none of them can remember what episodes they're in. But, you know, that's the thing. I wanted to do this because we all loved the show when we were growing up. My memory's fading a little bit, but I still, you know, I think I'm going to watch every episode again because, you know, rewatching series 1 and series 2. just made me think, oh, this, you know, it's got limitations. Of course, it's got limitations, budget limitations. Mm-hmm. You know, Craig Charles may not always have been the greatest actor, I think, maybe, especially in the first couple of seasons, but it doesn't matter because it's so funny and so ambitious and so likable that, you know, you can get beyond that. And then, you know, Crichton, once Crichton comes into it, I mean, God, yeah, I was doing Crichton impressions constantly. As well,
it's just the ideas of them, like some of the moments, like playing pool with planets in White Hall, talkie toaster, you know, Holly with this sort of super IQ, Ace Rimmer when he comes in Dimension
Ace Double, Rimmer,
smoke me a kipper, I'll be back for breakfast.
Yeah,
just absolutely, absolute genius. That's and you see, Jump, yeah, you see, it's in Dimension Jump. But you see, Robert Llewellyn went out his makeup, I believe, for the first time in. Oh, actually, no, I think he might be in The Last Day. He appears in a video on The Last Day, but you see him as Bongo in Dimension Jump when he offers to be available for Ace Rimmer covered in Tarama Salata. and Meltdown as well. Do you remember the Wattsworth one where they encounter all the great heroes and villains from Earth's past?
Yes. The show's got a real thing about Hitler, hasn't it?
I mean, Hitler's in it a lot.
Hitler, and there's a Hitler in the first episode of Series 12.
Yeah, and he in time slides too.
He's really funny. I need to look up the guy who played him because he made me laugh a lot. He has a really funny jamming session with...
Oh, it's Ryan, isn't it Ryan Gage
from
The Hobbit?
Yes,
he plays Alfred Lickspittle in the Hobbit films.
That's right. He's terrible in The Hobbit, but he's really good in this.
Alfred's all right. He's a bit of a sort of discount worm tongue, but... He means well. He's very funny as Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to say that very often.
There's a moment where he's like looking for they find his lighter, a Hitler, and he goes, "This could be anybody. Arnie Hitler." Oh, no, it is mine.
his Hitler is extremely exuberant. I love how kind of just upbeat he is. He's too into it.
It's funny though, looking at episodes here, like 3 and 4, there is not a single miss in either series. It's only when you get to 5 that you have kind of the first.
What's the miss?
It depends on what you're looking at. Holoship's great, the Inquisitor's great.
Inquisitor, it's not its DNA, I've just looked it up.
Is it DNA? Terraform, I don't think, is necessarily a great one. Quarantine's fantastic. Demons and Angels, that's not too bad. It's actually, you know, it's pretty solid generally. Batch Reality was the one with the despair squid. Remember that?
Yeah, which on the videos.
Jake Bullet.
On the videos, they switched it around and made it the first episode of Series 5.
Did they?
But even though that it's clearly the end of Series 5, because you're like, is Red Dwarf going to continue or not? Question mark hanging over, right?
Wasn't it? I want to say.
Is Demons and Angels where Dan Brown got his, his title?
Yes, that's actually where it's from. Yeah. I want to say it's Series 3, which came out around the same time as the Gulf War, and they pushed a couple of the episodes back. Or maybe it was Series 4. They pushed a couple of the episodes because they had...
It's the Waxwork one, isn't it?
It's the Waxwork, yeah, and they pushed them back because they felt it was a little bit... It didn't really jive with what was on the news.
You have joined us in the middle of our trying to remember which Red Dwarf episode is which.
I don't remember!
Special. Thank you for listening so far. Let's just wrap this thing up. Favorite Red Dwarf character?
Rimmer. He said in the voice of Lister.
Was that Lister?
Yeah, sorry. I don't do Northern very well. Rimmer, by far. It's
always. I thought it was all right. Try it again.
Always Rimmer. Rimmer.
It's not bad.
It sounds like he's on bread. It doesn't sound like he's...
Rimmer. That's not bad. That is not bad. Rimmer, yeah, because you saw so much of yourself in him.
Because of that. But, you know, but episodes like Rimmer World, he's so fucking good in this. Isn't it? And I want to say, I think the most lauded episode, didn't Gunman of the Apocalypse, that won awards?
Won an Emmy.
It won an Emmy, yeah. That's the one that people always talk about as being the sort of high watermark for Red Dwarf. I'm not sure if I agree with that, but it is very good.
It is good. It's got the Vindaluvians, which is the eyes stuck to the chin, which I really love.
That's a genius moment.
All right, Rimmer. That's one vote for Rimmer. One vote for Rimmer. Nick?
Are we allowed to include puppets?
Of course we are.
Mr. Flibble. He is the greatest character not only of Red Dwarf, but all of Western fiction. He should be.
Did you write a 40-page Mr. Flibble essay for school?
I'm going to start now.
I love that somewhere in Eastern fiction there is a character you love more that you're not talking about.
I'm not, yeah, exactly. Not counting out the panda bear puppet. No, I don't know what that means. all right, let's say world, the whole of world history. He's the greatest character.
The whole of world history?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Seems fair.
Yeah, that's good. Johnny?
Crichton is the funniest character.
His groinal attachment alone, I think, deserves special mention.
Mm-hmm. His inability to say the word snakehead always made me laugh.
What a snakehead! That's genius. I love that. Absolutely love it.
That's very, very good. Yeah, it's very hard for me to quibble with Crichton, but I do love Holly as well.
Which one?
Either.
Either Holly. Norman's
Holly.
Great as the kind of like, he's the downbeat, depressive Holly. Yeah. But Hattie's the kind of slightly batty, senile Holly. She's very good too.
Yeah.
Different comedy devices, but both are active.
Yeah. No, maybe they both make me laugh a lot.
I think Crichton's the best physical comedian out of them, because, I mean, his facial expressions are very, very good, especially through the mask. I think, weirdly, I think the weak link is Cat. He, to me, is the worst character. Not that he's bad, but in the same... You know, but he's a very one-note character. Like, he's the foil. He's the punchline to jokes. He's not the comic.
Well, because he can't grow.
Yeah, he's incredibly
one-note. There's a moment, again, going back to the one episode of Series 12 that I've seen, but he does turn the tables on the evil professor. He's holding him hostage.
Yes.
But he's identified as a psychopath in that, which kind of makes sense given that he is a cat. But, he's very well played. Danny John-Jules is very, very good in the role.
They do reveal in Series 12 that Cat now has reading glasses. So he does grow in a sense.
He grows old.
He grows old with presbyopia. Excellent.
And he can smell things, right? Which he couldn't to begin with. He could smell like danger far off from Starbucks cockpit. That was a growing in a sense.
Yeah,
they added another facet to his character.
They used to make out, I can smell a black hole.
I like him a lot. Yeah, I'm going to go, but I will go Crichton as well. Crichton is.
So we won.
Yeah, we won.
You win with Crichton. I have lots of affection.
Yeah. But Holly's interesting. I don't want to give, but I was looking at the IMDb yesterday, and Norman Lovett apparently comes back in this series. So we haven't seen that episode yet. So I'm intrigued. Spoiler alert.
Mr. Flibble.
Mr. Flibble may return as well. And do we have a favourite moment? James, is it actually doing Crichton to Robert Llewellyn? Was he in the room or was he not in the room?
No, he wasn't. I've never met Robert Llewellyn. This is why I couldn't do the podcast. Johnny, I've never met Danny John-Jules or Robert Llewellyn. So this is a sore point for me. I don't know if I do Crichton to Crichton. That might be too much.
Yeah, I've never done Ian McKellen to Ian McKellen. I can't bring myself to do it.
No.
Can't. It'd be too much. Do you have a favourite moment? Is our memory just a little bit too...
I said it in the interview to the guys, but I think the single cleverest line in any comedy ever is when Rimmer wants to go to Red Alert and Crichton says...
It does mean changing the bulb, sir.
Which I just think is just genius. I mean, just someone has been watching like Star Trek and like wondered about that, and suddenly it's written down. I mean, it's just so clever.
Yeah, that's a
there is quite a good line in the new series where Rimmer says, "Yellow alert is his favourite alert because it means somebody's going to die, but it's not him," which is pretty good. Not as good as the light bulb, but pretty
is
good.
Your favourite Red Dwarf moment being on a Red Dwarf podcast, besides this one?
I've never heard of Red Dwarf
You've
until
been
today.
On, yeah. You, what were you on, Smegheads?
Smegheads, Daniela Phillips, Jed Shepherd, shout out to them. They do a go through episode by episode.
And they actually know what they're talking about, don't they?
They tend to know what they're talking about.
In a really
I was of no help.
I've listened to your appearance on that podcast. You quitted yourself well.
Thanks, man.
What went wrong today?
I don't know. It's gone horribly wrong. I'm blaming Mr. Flibble.
Jimbo, your favourite moment?
I genuinely don't know what my favourite moment is. I mean, it could be, them. I love the exchange. It may not be my favourite moment, but it's in my head at the moment. I love the exchange, just the build-up, the inevitability. I love a gag where you know it's coming and it hurtles towards you like a giant black hole and there's no stepping out the way of it. Like the conversation they have with Talkie Toaster, where you know what's happening and they're asking him a question. Given that God is infinite and the universe is also infinite, would you like a toasted tea cake? It's just that you know it's coming, but that doesn't make it any less funny.
Yeah, it's good though that we're here now almost 30 years after the show began and they're still doing it, and getting around the fact that Rimmer somehow looks older and all that, all that sort of stuff. I'm struggling to think of any comedies that are still going 30 years after the original. And perhaps it was good that they took that break, enforced break, I think. And the BBC, for whatever reason, decided not to make any more.
I genuinely think, for me, Red Dwarf will always be one of the all-time great sort of like landmark comedies. For me, like Fawlty Towers, Red Dwarf, Blackadder, these are the things that shaped my humour sort of growing up. And as an enemy of comedy, they're the only things I find funny. I fully recommend everyone watch all of them.
I will.
Yes.
I am. Johnny?
What's the question?
You happy it's back?
Was that?
You happy it's back?
Oh, I'm very happy it's back, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's even though I don't think it's as good as it once was, it's just such a familiar presence that you can just sit down, quite happily spend half an hour with those characters and just, you know, catch up with their adventures in a way that, like, other long-running sitcoms... So the Simpsons, I have no interest in watching season 28 of The Simpsons because even though it's the same characters getting up to similar but not quite as good things, I find it tedious now. But Red Dwarf, I will happily sit down and wait for the two or three good lines an episode and, you know, just enjoy it for that.
But isn't there's a sense of familiarity and nostalgia, the fact that we've grown older with these characters, we've grown older with these people, that they are demonstrably older, they have lived their lives on Red Dwarf, and it feels a little bit like we've grown up and aged with them. Certainly that's how I see them. Mm. Like it makes me feel kind of warm and fuzzy when I see Red Dwarf on. Because I used to watch it every night before I went to bed. I'd put the VHS tape on and I'd play it and I would fall asleep watching Red Dwarf. That's what I used to do.
So. You now have cat-esque reading glasses.
Yes, I'm not dissimilar to old Cat or old Dwayne Dibley.
Do they explain why Rimmer ages? Sorry, this is a very obvious question, but...
I mean the physics of Rimmer and his light beam makes no sense, because sometimes he's tangible when it suits the plot, sometimes he's intangible when it suits the plot. Yeah. He becomes a hard light hologram in, I want to say, Legion. Is that the one where he gets...
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I don't think they ever... And I liked them for this. They didn't get hung up on their internal... you know, logic. They just... They wrote what was funny and then they made the facts fit it.
Yeah. So do you think it's going to be an end point at some point?
I mean, yeah, I think when their viewing figures drop below a certain threshold, they'll start making
it. It's on
them,
Dave. But... I mean, how many people are going to be watching it on Dave?
I'd be interested to know. Because
it's like more than 2 million, right? Which I think is good for Dave. I mean, they used
That's
to get...
great for Dave,
yeah,
isn't it?
I mean, it's Dave's big show, because, like, no one's staying around to watch Zapped after Red Dwarf has finished,
well,
are they?
I'm curious who's watching it. Like, is it a whole new audience, or is it, you know, middle-aged men like us?
The budget for the show, the last couple of seasons, the budget has gone up. I think it was really cheap for a while. But now it's the production values have actually got...
Well, the first series, it's just cardboard boxes, isn't it?
Hollyhock Drive.
Yeah. Hollyhock Drive. Literally a cardboard box with a button on it. I mean, the production values in the first two series are hilarious.
They literally did have to put in a light bulb for the...
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's old school BBC.
All right, okay. Time to bring this thing to an end, then. Thank you so much for listening. And sorry to any really diehard Red Dwarfers out there who have been yelling at the podcast device, listening device, throughout this. I'm going to go and try and rewatch the whole thing. The whole ruddy thing.
Do it.
I will. Including, I was just looking there at, like, season 7 and series 7 and 8, and I don't remember any of those.
There are good episodes in that. Crikey TV, I think, is very funny in Series 8. Well, okay. But I think half of Series 7 is very good. The second episode, certainly, where they lose Rimmer. Rimmer goes away to become Ace Rimmer. I think that episode is very, very good. There's that one where they get stuck in the water pipes. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
That's a very good episode. Well, in the same vein as Marooned and Ours Quarantine, not quite as good as those ones, but it's that... closeness of the characters where they're stuck in an area together, and that just breeds comedy.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen a single episode from 8.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, that's the one you say they brought the sort of Kachansky's back in it, and they brought back, oh my god, Mac McDonald.
Well, Kachansky's in 7. They find her in 7.
Yeah, so they actually brought the original cast back from the most part.
The crew, they resurrect the crew and the ship, because they've had several series without Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
And then it's back,
but it's, you know, but it's so good. Like, just rewatching it again, hearing, you know, that theme tune with those lyrics, it's one of the great out musical stings, I would say, of not just of any sitcom but of any TV show. It gives me the old warm and fuzzies. Yeah. It's amazing. Anyway, guys, it's cold outside.
There's no kind of atmosphere.
It's been a lot of fun talking about Red Dwarf. Thank you so much for listening. If you don't already listen to the regular podcast, we're out every Friday. Believe me, we know what we're talking about in that one for the most part. If you don't already listen to that or subscribe, then please do so.
And look up our other Red Dwarf special.
Yes, please do look up our other Red Dwarf special. That doesn't involve us talking about it.
This involves myself and Ali Plum shooting the shit with Rimmer and Lister.
Is it just those two?
No, it's Rimmer and Lister, and Doug's on it as well.
Doug Nanner. Spoilers on it as well, yeah. We also have another couple of specials coming your way as well. We have, currently, you can hear our Thor Ragnarok special. Our Paddington 2 spoiler special with director Paul King and writer Simon Farnaby will be out November 13th, again on Monday. And do keep in peel for any other specials heading your way over the next few weeks. Until the next time we meet, it's goodbye from Johnny Pyle.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Nick Dissemblin.
A smeg off. Bye.
You had to bring it down, didn't you?
Sorry, man.
Ridiculous.
Bye.
It's goodbye from James Dyer.
Smug me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to have a Crichton off with James Dyer, sir. Goodbye.